All right, go ahead and start us off.
Why am I starting us off? You start us off this time.
No.
Yeah.
You decided to record the podcast without me. You can start this off.
I started off last week.
Yeah, I know, without me.
Well, you were off raiding villages and eating babies. What am I supposed to do?
I messaged you. I said, hey, I'd be on. You're like, I already recorded it. And you're like, no. And so I was like, whatever.
Well, I didn't know when your raiding was going to be over. You know, I mean, there's a giant walking around. Where were you at? I know you're on the coast, like a fucking sack full of children or something.
Yeah, I was trying to jump into the ocean, but this whaling ship kept showing up and trying to harpoon me, so I couldn't stay in the ocean for too long. I just made my way inland and just kind of ate all the babies.
Yep. So, yeah, you're back. Welcome back. We managed to get through a podcast without you somehow.
Hooray.
So I am the Grumpy Dungeon Master Jay. I'm making fun of my other Grumpy Dungeon Master, Christopher.
Yay.
And we're the Grumpy Dungeon Masters, where we do a podcast talking about all sorts of nerdy stuff, but primarily role-playing games and D&D.
Very good intro. I'm proud of you.
I worked hard on it, you know, as it I was just saying it and it was flowing out, and I just had to keep going.
Sounds great. So what are we talking about today?
Oh, I got all sorts of stuff to talk about. What do you want to talk about? I know that you had said something the other day about we're going to talk a lot about the drama that's going on, but honestly, I don't know which drama you're referring to.
So the drama that happened while I was on vacation was Wizards received a lot of backlash, question mark. I didn't see it anywhere. That the Hadozi race lore drop in the new Spelljammer book was very racist. So
are you sure you want to go down this path?
Yes.
Okay.
So WotC released an errata which took all of it out. And I'm sitting there, I'm looking at all the conversations going on and going, okay, their argument for that it's really racist, there's an argument to be said that it works for that. But that's not what I got an issue with. What I got an issue with was when I was telling you about this, and you're like, yeah, that's not even the original Hadozi lore.
Yes, and that's when
I lost my damn mind. Why the hell did they rewrite the Hadozi lore into something else when it was already there? And I did. I looked it up. It had nothing to do with some wizard and some magic potion and then another wizard rebellion so they can, you know, get the Hadozi out of the slave trade. Like, that was just non-existent pre-5th edition Spelljammer.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it is. Like, they just were they're from this planet. They just aren't tall trees. They glide. They're monkey people. Who cares? That was the end of the story. You didn't need to add anything else.
Yeah.
So the one time you add lore, you add that?
Yeah. Rat. Like, here's the thing. I don't think, and mind you, I have no clue who fucking wrote it.
Jeff Grubb wrote the original Hadozi.
None of that lore is
in there. The new lore, I have no idea. Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. I don't have a clue who wrote the new lore. I can tell you almost certainly that whoever is writing it isn't thinking twice about shit like that. They're not being racist. They're just writing stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, oh, I'm going to write this just to be a fucking racist. People don't usually do that.
No.
But I bitch a lot on here about changing lore. Yeah. And the fact that they went ahead and did that, that irked the shit out of me too. That was the thing.
It's like they didn't need that explanation. Like that information, that story you made up, for as good or as bad as it was, just wasn't needed.
It's canon. Leave it alone.
They were already there. Yeah. They didn't need anything else. They didn't need anything more. And I mean, another part of that as well too is like the GIF. Mm-hmm. Now I can understand this change more from my mechanical standpoint, but like the GIF are supposed to be very, very thick-headed, for lack of a better term. So they don't get magic, and thus they can't be spelljammers. So Gif just aren't inclined to cast magic. Mm-hmm. They don't have the ability to summon spells up and cast spells.
Yeah.
Neither so I did can say like
yeah, like up through third edition, dwarves weren't spellcasters.
Right. So yeah. I can understand why they took that out of the lore and made it so like Gif are just like any other race. Like I can understand that. That's just adjusting with the times and
yeah, it's less about adjusting with the times and just yeah, let's let anybody play whatever the fuck they want to play.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily like that, but I get it from, you know, a business standpoint.
Yeah. Like I said, I can understand that change. That change is a good change. Although I wouldn't mind it being there, but your system doesn't support non-spellcasters unless they're just going to be fighters.
Yeah.
Like I'm playing a ranger GIF right now and half the shit that I do is spellcasting. So kind of hard to be anything but a spellcaster nowadays.
Yeah. If you only want to not cast spells, you better be playing pretty much a monk, a rogue, fighter, or barbarian. That's about it. And even some of those can cast spells, just depending.
Yeah. The monks do. The barbarians do.
Even fighters do, if you pick the right one.
Yeah. So, and that got me thinking into the issue that I have with the playtest. So, we kind of covered the playtest, and we were kind of on board with the direction they were headed. And then I got to have a vacation and talk with a couple other DMs. And generally I'm okay with what they've added and changed.
I am not.
But then they come in and I'm told that half the changes that they did just make 1D&D essentially Pathfinder 2.
Yeah, I saw that Bruce messaged you that. Heard that Bruce messaged you that.
I talked with Bruce and said, okay, well, how is it similar? And basically, the way you pick a race background character, that's the exact same thing that Pathfinder does with a different paint of coat. And that got me kind of irritated. Like, if that's what everyone wants to do, I guess that's fine. But I kind of like that would still irritate me too, because there's not enough crunch in 1D&D. And that is going to be my statement kind of going forward with the feedback that I give them that I've been writing up, is that they're taking a lot of what the difficult decisions when it comes to making a character away, and that is ruining the game and homogenizing it down to the kind of like everyone is exactly the same. Kind of the issue that I kept bringing up, like everyone's going to be, that's a fighter, is going to be X race with the orc package.
Yeah, obviously you didn't listen to the podcast that Mike recorded last week, but literally you are quoting us.
So I went back and I looked at 4th edition. And I was like, okay, how do we do it at 4th? He's like, remind me how we did it. And so in 4th edition, when you make a character, you pick the race, they have two places where you could basically put your +2. And then a place where you could put your +1. And that was to signify that, like, if you were a dwarf, okay, you could choose between strength and intelligence. And your +1 is always con.
So 4th edition actually allowed you to move your stats around?
A little bit, yeah. So, like, your main stats were going to be either you're a dwarf. So you're either going to be very physical, or you're going to be very intelligent because you're a scholar, a dwarven scholar. Mm-hmm. So like you could put +2 to strength or +2 to your intelligence, and your +1 always went to con because you're a hardy race. Other like elves, for example, always got the +2 in dex, but then could put like the +1 in two different places. Okay. And I'm not saying they need to go back to that, but I really honestly think that they don't need to change the racial adjustment of the stats. Leave those tied into the race that people pick. Yeah, it's cool that it's in backgrounds, and I understand it, and I agree with you that it makes sense for it to be in backgrounds, but if that's just what Pathfinder 2 is doing, and you're just being lazy about this and not thinking of a different system altogether, then just stop. Just stop. If you're just going to become Pathfinder 2, just stop releasing this whole system. Yeah. I don't want to play Pathfinder 2 under a 6th edition branding. I really don't.
I don't want to play any game that is dumbed down. And that is what they're doing. I understand. They want to sell this damn game to as many people as possible because it is a mega corporation. At this point, Dungeons and Dragons is probably worth $500 million. So the idea is just to sell it to anybody and everybody. And for them to do that, they have to make it so easy that literally anyone can play it. And that's not good for the long-term health of the game. It just isn't.
And then removing every single piece of negative thing that your race brings to the table irritates the crap out of me. The fact that drow don't have sunlight sensitivity anymore annoys me. Everyone should have some kind of negative to them. I don't care. And I'm kind of like playing my feet on this one. Like, they really need to. They need to bring back stats to align to the race that you pick or lineage that you pick, whatever it may be. And then they need to allow you to have some customization with that to kind of move it where you want to move it.
Like, okay. The thing is, though, we on this podcast, we went over this in depth 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Because that's when we went over the thing. And then me and Mike went over it in depth last week with our thoughts on it.
I didn't get my chance to say. So if they want to go back to like a fourth edition where they force you into like these certain categories, do that. But don't copy Pathfinder 2. If you want to redevelop where stats are assigned and do it when you roll dice, even. That would be better than just copying Pathfinder 2.
Yeah. The hope is that they actually listened to the surveys. I personally spent well over an hour filling out my survey and giving actual feedback. Hopefully everybody else did too. From what I'm seeing on the different DM groups that I'm a member of, the playtest, it's not going well. There are a ton of people who are saying the same thing that we're saying.
And I just it just bugs me, and it seems like these problems, and then like the Hadozi incident on top of that. It's like, okay, you have your front end wizard folk who do a great job. Jeremy Crawford is writing another edition, and I don't think it's all coming from him. You know,
no, it's coming from the corporate suits.
Yeah, and like.
I don't even think this is not coming from Chris Perkins. This is not coming from Crawford. This is not coming from it's not coming from the hardcore gamers. It just, I really don't feel that it is. They are beholden to the people above them. And there are people that are above Crawford. There are people that are above, you know, that entire group. And they're going to do what's going to make them the money. Or at least what they think is going to make them the money. And I've seen it a lot of times with businesses who are looking to just expand and grow, and they don't think about the long-term health of the product. And a lot of times that ends up backfiring on them. People, if they go forward with 6th edition, as we've seen, which, you know, I know things will change to an extent, but if they continue to go this route, a lot of the base is going to walk away. There are more than enough competitors out there. Hell, you can always go to earlier editions or just keep playing 5th, which works fine.
Yeah. And that's kind of the issue that I have, is like 5th just needs to have an advanced version of it. You know, like it works perfectly fine for new players to get in. I have introduced and run so many new people into the game, you know, as it is, and not had any problems. I had problems with 4th, but I had no problems with 5th. And to make it even simpler is just not going to be good. And to make this decision based on trying to reach a larger audience is not going to help the game in the long run either. Like, just look at Spelljammer and how much of a
good show
flop that was. And it was only a third of it was a flop. Everyone loves the Menagerie. And everyone likes the adventure.
That's just more, it's another adventure and it's more monster stats. You know, that's fine.
But literally the book, and I read it, almost every single paragraph says, just, you're the DM, do whatever you want to do. Like, that's not what we want. We don't want to do. We want you to tell me the rules.
Yeah.
Spend $60 for you to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And then I can decide whether or not to change it.
Yeah. Why even write the rules? What they really needed in this in Spelljammer. And I'm actually glad that this is the topic that we're on, because this was one of the things I wanted to bring up of what to do when you don't have rules. And there, with Spelljammer, that's the case. But what they really needed to do, and honestly, they did this a lot in second edition, is have variant rules in the same book. So there are two ways that you can run spell jamming. If you just want to say you fly from one planet to the next, that's it. Oh, you get into you get into a space combat with this other group. We're not going to worry about the distances. We're not going to worry about any of that. That's fine as long as you, the DM, and your players are good with it. You don't always have to have a billion rules, but there are a shit ton of people like myself, like you, who actually want hardcore rules for how this stuff works. We're very insistent that we need it, and they could have just released it in a bracket off to the side. Here's your rules for how you actually run it if you want. These are advanced rules.
Yeah, I'm thinking something must have came up.
No, nothing came up. This is the direction they're moving the game. They are simplifying it.
So when I was reading my stuff over on a little vacation, I read the rules for the 5th edition Spelljammer stuff. I also brought the 4th edition Spelljammer book with me. Now, the 4th edition Spelljammer book was more of a complete thing. It had the adventure and all the monster stats and everything in that one book.
Yeah.
And it was like 300 pages. And
which is about the size of the three books combined, give or take.
No, it's double the size.
There are 64 pages a piece. Yeah, so that's 192 pages. Okay, so it's another 100 pages on top of it.
Yeah. So even the rules in the 4th edition were kind of very vague. And they did try to stress that when it came to Spelljammer ships, they were very expensive. And that more often than not, that there's no ship-to-ship combat, and that the ships would try to basically catch up to another ship and then board them so they could kill the crew and then take the ship.
Sure.
And at least they provided that information as to why they didn't include any ship-to-ship combat rules in the 4th edition version.
Right.
Granted, they had a little bit more, but it wasn't any at all. And then when I come back home and I look at what the second edition rules are, and see that it's like 160 pages on basically how to equip your ship and what the holes are, different kind of spelljammer helms, and then like how to make your own and how to equip your spelljammer ship, like
all of the different all the different magic items to upgrade your ship, and just tons and tons and tons of stuff.
The
combat were 20 plus pages for second edition on how ship to ship combat works. It's a page and a half in fifth.
Yeah. My only thought is that something happened with Spelljammer. Not as an IP, but more as kind of like as a writing, that they specifically aren't allowed to use any of the second edition stuff because they're not roping in Jeff Grubb into the development of the new Spelljammer stuff.
It's not like Jeff Grubb owned the rights to any of that stuff. Everything was owned by TSR, which was purchased by WotC. They have access to all of it.
I understand, but I'm guessing there has to be something there. Otherwise, the other answer is that it's just complete laziness that they didn't include it.
Yeah, I'm going with the latter.
I'm going to hope it's the former.
It's literally just a simplification of the game. When 5th edition came out, I like it because it is somewhat simplified. And when I say somewhat, it's a lot simplified. So it flows quickly. But, after a while, you really want more. You want the crunchiness. I don't know a proper word for it. I want more rules.
You want more crunch.
I do. I want more rules. I've bitched about this for a couple of pretty much since we've been doing this podcast. And I
sound like a broken record. Fifth edition is Captain Crunch been sitting in my bowl now for 30 seconds. All right. The top layer is crunchy. The bottom layer is soggy. Sixth edition is like it's been sitting here for 30 minutes where it's just all a giant sponge.
Yeah, I want the Captain Crunch that has been poured in the bowl without the milk.
I need to cut the roof of my mouth. That's the
I want to bleed after playing this game.
And but like I understand that that's not going to help establish a new player base. So just
make it variant rules.
Yeah.
You give the option. You make the book 300 pages, and that other 100 pages, you know, would be, oh, if you really want to get in depth, here's how you run your ship-to-ship combat.
The amount of variant rules in the Dungeon Master Handbook are extensive. And yes. The amount of players and DMs that I've talked to that don't understand, like, and yes, you could tumble through a monster square. The variant rule is sitting right there.
Yep.
So
flanking rules, that's a variant.
Yeah, but that kind of came from 4th as well, too. So it is a variant now, but people still expect it for some reason.
And we've never used it in my games, but it's a variant rule that is there that if we wanted to, we can. I love variant rules. You know, every DM has their way of running things, and if you want to run a simplified game, go for it. There is nothing wrong with that. But if you're like me, I really want more stuff. So what do you do in the case, will you spelljammer space combat as the primary thing? What do you do if you're looking for that? And obviously in 5th edition, it does not exist. That video I sent you the other day was actually kind of useful. I don't remember the name of it, but it was basically a video on what to do in space combat for spelljammer. And the options are to look back at 2nd edition or even 4th edition and pull from there, as you'd have to literally build kind of your own system. There was a couple of them from 5th edition that are somewhat useful. The Ghost of Saltmarsh rules for actually running a ship, while they're not necessarily great for combat per se, they are useful for running into encounters. You know, in Saltmarsh, if there was a storm that you got caught in, everybody had a position that they were assigned to on the ship. All of the players would have a position, and then you would have to sort of make group checks to successfully, you know, not damage your ship going through the storm. There's a lot of stuff like that you could do a spelljammer. The other one was Avernus. Apparently the war machines in there have some rules.
Some vague rules. Yeah. It all goes down to basically being, you know, get close and board them though. So
yeah, that's fine. But at the same time, you could effectively, one of the things that I heard about in the Avernus war machines thing was that you had basically a fumble table type thing where you would roll on it. And then if you rolled poorly, things could happen. Like you could spring a leak. One of the cables could come loose and start, you know, doing electrical damage, stuff like that. And there's no reason you couldn't do something like that with Spelljammer. Okay, these two ships are trying to close at each other, and they are firing back and forth at each other. So whether you do the actual combat is irrelevant, but you could use a mishap table to see, oh, you know, this, we took a shot to the starboard bow, you know, there's damage there, oh, it started a fire, all these different things.
Yeah, and honestly, the Star Wars 5e rules, even though it's a non-official source, you know, they have all their starfighter combat, and I think that's probably where the biggest problem came in. People are expecting Star Wars level ship-to-ship fighting, and that just doesn't exist in Spelljammer. That's not the setting that it is.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I don't think you have to go into 2nd edition level of difficulty, but adding in some mishap tables, adding in needing to make some group checks to navigate properly, things of that nature would be helpful in the Spelljammer setting.
Not helpful. It should be required.
Yeah,
it should have had its own set of rules. I said, if we have to go back to other sources in 5th, those are the two big ones.
Yeah, those are the two that were in that video, and that's the only ones I'm aware of. But I would go with one of them. Just seems relatively simple. You would have to kind of make up your own stuff to make it work, but that's what a DM's for. You're supposed to make up stuff anyway.
Yeah. All right, so never talking about Spelljammer again.
Yeah, we'll try to bitch a little bit less about all of the current problems, but I'm sure we'll find a way.
So my wife is wanting to DM a session here. Not this weekend, but next weekend.
Oh, she was already DMing a game.
She was trying to get one set up, but it didn't happen.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Well, life happens. It's hard to set up a game sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
So she is DMing her first game. She's running the first thing of Candlekeep for us on our stream. So on the 24th. Make sure everyone shows up on the 24th to our stream at 9 o'clock on Twitch. Twitch.tv/GrumpyDungeonMasters and come give her subs and give her encouragement and other wonderful things as she basically runs us through the first chapter of Candlekeep.
Yeah.
And then we're two sessions left in my player as the DM with his Phandelver Essentials storyline. And then I have to start taking over again and start running Waterdeep again.
All right. I thought you already ran Waterdeep.
I get to run it again, though. It wasn't on stream.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be Waterdeep. It's going to be Waterdeep, but it's not going to be Waterdeep.
It's in Waterdeep.
It's in Waterdeep. It's my own home brewery of stuff in Waterdeep.
Awesome.
And I hadn't started that at all, like in the slightest.
You'll be fine. I mean, I've done Waterdeep, so yeah.
I know Waterdeep. I bought a book off of DM's Guild that was, should be right here. It was Waterdeep City Encounters, a companion thing from the DM's Adept Guild. So the guys who help write Waterdeep wrote this as well, too. Cut content for Waterdeep. And there's this massive table, okay? Like, the table is so big, it starts on page 1 and takes up all of page 2.
All right. What's it a table for?
It's a table for 3 other tables that you have to use in conjunction with it, depending on where you are and what faction you are. So, like, you have an encounter, and then, like, if you're in the field district on a 5 and 6, you can get a beggar. If you're in the dock district, a 6 and 7 will get you the beggar. But it won't happen in the castle, City of the Dead, the north side of Waterdeep, of Waterdeep. Yeah. It's this massive table. And then when you go to like different encounters, there's like more tables that you have to run, depending on like factions or what's going on.
So the whole thing is a randomized generator.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I love it. No, that's great.
And I got the soft cover book, like version from it. It was like $15 bucks off of DM's Guild. It worked out pretty well. The best part is they use the same artwork from the actual like Waterdeep book. So it's all like out of order. Like for some reason, like Xanathar is here on this page. Does Xanathar have anything to do with this page? No.
No. No, of course not.
So it's going to be interesting. I'm kind of running them through the Dragon Heist story in a way, but there's no Dragon Heist taking place.
Okay.
That makes sense. Because because my players already did the Dragon Heist and they already got the gold.
It should be one of those things where it's going on sort of in the background. it's actually happening. The other group that they played is running through it, or another group is running through that, and they just keep coming across the aftermath of everything.
that some of that will take effect in the story. The fact that that the previous group did already find the Dragon Heist, so they really can't go after the gold again.
Okay.
But it's going to be well known that that group did it, you know.
Yeah, okay. There you go. So this is 6 months later or whatever.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm going to tie that, since it's only 1 through 5, I'm going to tie in a couple like big changing world events that are going on while they're kind of doing their thing. And when they hit level 5 and they complete the adventure that I have, they then have to choose where they're going from there. And they could basically, I'm thinking like 3 different branches they could take.
Let's go to Icewind Dale again.
Yeah, kind of like go to Icewind Dale, go to Cholt, kind of thing, things like that. Like,
yeah.
So we can pick the story up and just go to different places.
Yeah, where in the Sword Coast do we want to go this week?
Like, I figured, like, we could tie in, like the Red Wizard of Thay, maybe. You know, like, a couple other big threats that would...
Oh, I know what you could do. Mm-hmm. You could have a Spelljammer ship come down and pick them up and then run them through that adventure.
If that's what they choose to do. But
okay, it needs to be an option.
It needs to be an option, yeah. My wife says she doesn't want to do Spelljammer. She doesn't want to do stuff in space. And I keep telling her that Spelljammer is just not... It's not like Star Trek or Star Wars.
It's not. Know? It's literally just D&D, except you can go from planet to planet.
And there's Hippo Men.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that there are. And talking slimes.
Talking slimes.
So, yeah, we finished up the pirate campaign, finally, that Johnny had been running. Yeah, I mean, it's been going on. It started before COVID. Like, we were 7th level or so before COVID, and then it sort of got put on the back burner because of that. And, you know, then we picked it up a year ago or so, and finally it wrapped up a little earlier than initially planned, but we were ready to move on to other stuff. But there was a few fun things that came out of the final adventure. Big badass boss fight where I got to go one-on-one with another barbarian, except he was the kind of barbarian that you actually just can't kill until their rage ends. So you know how that goes. A couple of cool things that came up, and we never really got to find out if this would work or not. And I want to get your thoughts on it.
Sure.
So I should probably pull up reverse gravity. I love spells like this because reverse gravity, you can just do all sorts of crazy shit. Okay, so reverse gravity is a 50-foot radius, 100-foot high cylinder centered on a point within range.
Mm-hmm.
And it literally just reverses the gravity within that area. So effectively, it's 100 feet across. So one of the ships that we were having to deal with, it's the Galleon. I don't remember exactly how big they are, but like 120 to 150 feet. Like, they're massive. If you cast reverse gravity just under, say, the front third or front half of that ship, what's going to happen to it?
How big is the ship?
We'll say it's 150 feet. The radius of the spell is 50 foot.
Then everything that's on the ship will get thrown into the sky. The ship itself probably just get lifted up a little bit. And then it would probably just like teeter out of the gravity well and fall down because it's 3 times the size of the spell. So it's going to be affected by it, but it's not. It's going to just move the position of the ship. It's not going to lift the ship into the sky.
Weight is of no consequence. It literally is just reversing the gravity of everything that's within there.
Yeah, and the problem is 2/3 of the ship have gravity.
And it's, well, I mean, you can put it over under, you know, 3/4 of the ship. However much
it's a 50-foot radius. Okay, so if
it's 100 feet. You could put it under 2/3 of the ship if you really wanted.
Then if you centered it in the dead center of the ship, then the ship would get lifted up.
Yeah, but the idea is to not lift it. The idea is to put it under the front half of it or so and flip it. And there are no rules for this. This does not exist. You know, it's just
I don't think you'd flip the ship. If you do it on the front half of the ship, you're going to lift it up out of the water, and the back end is going to go in. But all it's going to do then is just bob, and then probably like capsize, and then right itself.
I mean, capsizing is good enough. You know that's going to
most ships though can, especially galleons can re.
Sure. Yeah. I'm aware they can sort of reorient themselves.
Yeah.
But yeah, like if it lifts up, sort of flips to the side, capsizes, that would have been sufficient. We never got to fully do it. We ended up hitting a smaller ship with it, which just lifted the whole damn ship.
Yeah. One of my things was I was going to have, when I was playing the fish man that had the powers of gravity, he had, I think it was an ability where he could point at something within like its line of sight and then launch it 100 feet into the air. And the idea was a combo reverse gravity from the simulacrum to cast that, launch him 100 feet up into the air, and then basically use the other spell to shoot him up even further, throw him up 200 feet, essentially. Well, and then
if gravity's reversed, wouldn't it throw him back to the ground?
No, I would throw him
outside of the reverse gravity.
Yeah, up and outside the reverse gravity, and then a far distance. But we're in a cave the entire time, so.
Oh yeah, so you don't have enough room to ever try that. The use that we found for the reverse gravity was pretty good though, because there was a smaller ship that was underwater. It had the ability to move underwater, like a submarine. So Muffin dimension doored to get it within range, and then cast reverse gravity in front of it. And he casts it 70 feet underwater. So when this thing goes into it on the next turn, it and all of the water are just effectively lifted 30 feet up out of the water. Yeah. So there's this giant, like, 30-foot dome of water sticking up above the rest of the ocean that we're all, all this crazy-ass combat's taking place in there.
Yeah.
It's kind of a wild situation, but lots of fun. I love reverse gravity. I love crazy spells like that.
Yeah, and that's kind of like what I need. I need to get a campaign that goes into the high levels.
Yes, yes, you do.
I'm getting stuck at like the 5 and then ending at 10 and not really having much fun, beyond there.
Yeah, we were only 13th level, so not super high, but still on the higher end of things.
But I'm glad you guys finished your campaign. That's always a big thing.
Yep. Yeah, we start Ravenloft this coming weekend. I have never gotten to play through it, so this will be fun. Mike, who was on the podcast with me last week, will be running it.
That's cool.
Yeah. Already got my character ready to go, but we're doing session 0 and probably just getting through the beginning leg of things next weekend.
Yeah, I'll be running a the Ravenloft one-shot. I think we can do that every Halloween and just see how far they get.
Oh yeah. Okay. I had to think about which one you're talking about, but I remember the one that we did. Yeah. We talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah.
Last Halloween, I think.
Yep. It's pretty much just chapter 4 of Ravenloft.
Yeah.
Right there in one night, 4 hours.
Yep. Should be fun. I'm going to, After he starts Ravenloft, I think after the week after that, I'm going to be running my current campaign for a couple of weeks, then putting it on pause, and then I'm going to run some Call of Cthulhu for a while. I need another system. I'm very just sort of burned out on only 5e, so
yeah,
going to run that for a month or so.
Yeah, that shouldn't be too bad. I like Call of Cthulhu a lot. You just got a lot of theater of mind, a lot of description
heavy. That's how I run stuff anyway.
Yeah, that's how I do stuff.
Well, it is. I've been playing fucking forever. In second edition, that's how everything was. It was theater of mind. We didn't really have a lot of minis. We didn't have battle maps. So
I was showing Shelly today how to go through and set maps up in Foundry.
Oh yeah.
So she could, build the maps out that she needs to. What do you think about the VTT announcement that they made? Oh.
You really need to go back and listen to the podcast. I know you won't, but no, because that was actually the primary topic we discussed, was the whole VTT. I understand why they're doing it, because they are thinking ahead. That's where the big money is at. It really kind of is. Selling books will get you so far, but if you can start selling all of this little nickel and dime stuff online, and a good portion of D&D takes place only online, so there's just a shit ton of money for them to make in this mostly untapped market.
What would you do if I told you they add that as a thing in fourth edition and then decided to scrap it and sold it all to a third-party company for less than $100,000?
I am not surprised, because of multiple reasons. One, fourth people didn't like 4th. 2, D&D was not even close to where it is now.
So they developed the program. It didn't get out of beta, but I was a part of the beta.
Oh, okay.
Where you could basically build your maps with the grid system, or with like their they released a bunch of tile sets in fourth edition that you could build maps with. So they were released the images, the tile sets from those tile sets, and let you basically build those maps in their own custom builder online, much like how people use Incarnate now.
Yeah.
And could basically just arrange the tile sets like they were playing Legos to build out the maps. And that's what I was doing to tile sets in real life. So I built out tons of maps, and it worked amazingly well. And like, it was set to basically launch with, like, you know, you could buy, spend like, you know, $20 and buy this tile set and buy, you know, this monster token set for, you know, $5, $3, whatever, what have you.
Right.
You know, and it was all going to be part of the subscription that they had with the character builder. It was already there. It was working fine. You know, they had a couple bugs they had to work through. Like, you could eventually stack so many tiles into the, like, a map that it crashed the system and deleted the map. But, like, you'd have to go really overboard to do that. And, you know, it was beta. I was testing it out. And then, like, they just pulled the plug on it one day, and I just couldn't get there anymore. And then I found this other, found an article that says that they sold it. They sold it for, like, $90,000. And this other company basically took it, did the same thing that they did, and basically no one used it because they super heavily microtransactioned the crap out of it. Like, every tile was a dollar or some shit like that.
Ouch.
Yeah, it was really bad. And they just disappeared off the face of the planet.
Yeah. You know? What is likely to happen with WotC doing this is they will upload their modules, all of the adventures, and, you know, we're talking several years down the road before this happens, but so you'll be able to just run the Waterdeep module, you'll be able to run all the Icewind Dale module, et cetera, et cetera. And in the process, you'll get access to all of their maps, and probably, I would hope that they allow you to modify the maps how you want.
Well, that's what they said, is that you get to build.
Right. As you purchase each of these, you get access to all of the stuff that goes with it that you can then mix and match and do however you want.
Yeah.
But it's going to be you're going to have to spend, you know, $30 or $50 to get access to all of, you know, this one module. And over time, that you've also bought the books, then you bought the modules, you know, and they'll probably release little booster packs. Oh, you want access to all these other minis that aren't in any of these modules. It's a cash cow that they're sitting on, and they know this.
I think the downfall of it is going to be that it's in 3D.
I don't know that that's necessarily an issue, because people already use, like, Tabletop Simulator, things like that, and those are all 3D as well.
With how they have it set up now, it doesn't seem that appealing to me. There are 3D tabletop systems that are out there where you can build maps and have it all be 3D, and they don't appeal to me that much either. I really like the top-down map view, but that's just a personal thing, so maybe there's more people out there that want to do it. But I feel like if you're going to require everyone to have a subscription to use that VTT service, people aren't going to flock to it. Like Foundry, for example, I spend $30. I buy Foundry. I host the maps and stuff on my system. My players don't have to spend a cent.
Yeah.
You know, but if everyone has to have a monthly subscription to use the VTT.
Yeah, that's the wrong way to go.
Which is what I think they're going to do.
Yeah,
it's going to be rolled into one of D&D Beyond tiers. It's not going to be part of the free tier. And I just don't think. And then on top of that, the people that I know, like, I have a hard time finding people that will play online because they don't have a computer.
Yeah.
Like, and with a webcam.
You say that, but yeah, when I was running it during COVID, like, two of my players had computers that were fucking potatoes.
Yeah.
Like, could barely, like, we struggled even running Roll20.
Right. And so now you want them to run a fully simulated 3D environment?
When we first started, we were trying it on Tabletop Simulator, and that was impossible. I was the only person in my whole playgroup who had a computer that could run it consistently.
Yeah, I don't feel like it's going to be that big a success they're trying to make it out to be. It may be a little too much. If they would release like what Foundry does or what Fantasy Ground does first, that would probably be a lot better, and then move into the giant 3D tabletop simulated graphic effects thing.
Yeah, or give access to both. You know, because what Roll20 does, what Foundry does, those are...
The amount of time and resources and personnel you need to make a 3D model of something versus a 2D token is vastly different.
Yeah.
So they hired up to the 3D model side. They're not throwing any money to the 2D environment side.
Yeah, that's true. I know they're not. They're going to leave that to Roll20 and Foundry and those companies, and those companies will do just fucking fine. Because there are people like myself, if I ever played it online, I'm probably not jumping into the D&D Beyond. I'm just not. I would take the cheapest route possible and try to find the freest route possible. Maybe just donate a little here and there.
Just give up a soul, one of your freckles, you'll be fine.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, I know that's the way they want to go. I don't want them to, but there's a lot of things I don't want WotC doing that they keep doing. Anyway, so I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole. This is a whole other topic, by the way, just changing on you just like that. So I got to looking up what is the first novel based on Dungeons & Dragons game, because I honestly didn't know. The very first novel ever written about Dungeons & Dragons was Quag Keep in 1978 and is written by Andre Norton, who is a very famous sci-fi writer.
And how long did it take you to find that?
Long enough to type in the words, first Dungeons & Dragons novel ever printed.
Okay, I was worried there for a second. That's what I did to Google right now, and it popped up immediately with that answer.
Yeah, it was very quick. But I read the whole Wikipedia article, which led me to find a few things I didn't know about, including the Quag Keep thing. But apparently they released a whole bunch of other types of novels under sort of different names. There was Fantasy Forest and Heart Quest.
Okay.
And so I had to look these things up. And Fantasy Forest, I'll come back to Fantasy Forest. Heart Quest, there are 6 novels that exist, and it was basically pushed towards young girls during the 80s. Each novel was billed as a quest for romance and adventure.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I have to find these, by the way. At some point, I need all of them.
Oh, that author's name has the same name as my daughter. It's spelled the same way, too.
Well, all right,
like
then.
The cookie.
And then Fantasy Forest, these were kind of choose-your-own-adventure books. There were 10 books. And I looked some of these up. Some of them were pretty expensive. One of them is written by Jim Ward, which we know about.
Mm-hmm.
And they also released a board game that I found. And there were 2 editions of the board game. There was one in the very early 80s called Fantasy Forest, and it's basically a kid's board game. And then they released another one in the in 1990. So the one in the very early 80s, I think it's 82, is very kind of generic. Cool looking artwork. There's a wizard on the front, big TSR logo on it. But the one released in 1990 actually had miniatures, had 4 miniatures from the D&D cartoon in it. Like 4 of the characters were in that. And it sells for a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
Like, I was looking, how much for a copy of this? The cheapest one I found was about $300.
It's amazing how much these old books can sometimes go for, especially like, you know, you go to Goodwill or something like that and you see like all these old books, you're like, oh, they're all worthless or 25 cents. I'm not going to buy any.
Yeah.
Like that one book on the thing, you know, is like, oh, that book's the first edition. It's worth $1,000.
Yeah. Like these aren't super expensive, but the first one, the Jim Ward one from Fantasy Forest, it sells for about $75. It's just a little paperback novel.
Jeez, that's still a lot.
Oh no, that's a hell of a lot for a paperback. Yeah. But anyway,
what's the size of the book?
I mean, it's paperback size. You remember that, huh?
Yeah, I did. The weird questions that we get.
Yeah. So for anyone who's not aware, I sell a lot of stuff on eBay, and I actually got somebody messaging me about a paperback book, and their question was, what is the size of the paperback book? It's fucking paperback book size, guy. Come on.
18 by 17.
Yeah, it's massive. Weighs like 17 pounds. No, it's a fucking paperback novel. But I got to reading about the Quag Keep, since I know nothing about the book, the one written by Andre Norton. And it's actually almost the story for the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon.
Really?
Yeah. It's seven people from our world, six or seven people from our world, were pulled into Greyhawk.
Okay.
And then they run different adventures and such. I don't know the details of all the characters. I didn't get that far into it. But it's the premise of D&D was that it was six kids from our world pulled into Dungeons & Dragons. Well, that's what this is. It's six or seven people pulled into Dungeons & Dragons. There was one other really, really cool thing that I found out about it. They go into a little bit of detail, but one of the characters in there is a berserker. And mind you, this is from 1978, so this is actually before Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. But he is a berserker that when he gets high enough in skill, aka high enough level, he will be able to turn into a wereboar. So it got me to thinking about, you know, why are there not prestige classes that can do that, or archetypes? Whereas, you know, you're a barbarian, and when you hit ninth level or whatever the levels are where you get abilities, you allow a shapeshift into a wereboar with new stats and such.
Because it's overpowered in 5th edition and I hate it. No. Good.
It seems cool. It seems cool to me.
There is something like that already.
I found the free
Path of the Beast. You get a beast form when you rage.
Yeah, but you don't. You get bits and pieces. I'm talking a fucking werewolf or a werebore, like the legit version of it, not parts of animal.
Well, see what the player does in my game that I'm talking about. He plays Path of the Beast, but he's also a shifter. Okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So he takes the shifter and shifts into the animal, and then basically uses the rage to shift further more into animal-like, growing whatever he needs to.
Right, and then gets an armor class of 26 and all the extra hit points. That guy.
Like I said, it's a good build. It's a good build, yeah. So
yeah.
I mean, so like things like that do exist now, but not straight up werebore.
Yeah, like I actually found the pre-first edition class, subclass for the berserker that can do that. I found it in Dragon Magazine number 3.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically you pick a clan when you choose this berserker path, and the clans are were-rat, werewolf, werebore, weretiger, werebear, and when you hit a certain level, you're able to actually shapeshift into those.
That's cool.
Yeah, I thought it was really fucking cool.
I've been trying to think of, like, for my homebrew world, what's a good fodder creature. And I thought about using bipedal boars, essentially. Kind of like in place of orcs, you know, kind of harken back to even a more bestial form. Because orcs have gone so far around the fantasy circle that they're not Tolkien anymore. They're not stands-in for certain army in the 40s anymore, and now they're basically Thrall. So
yeah,
they've come so far culturally, you know, that
changing the fucking lore. Stop it.
You can't have them be the mindless killing machines that they once were. It sure just doesn't work anymore. I mean, you can, but then everyone's like, that's just mean to orcs, and they might accuse you of stuff, and you don't like that. But yeah, if it's a giant pig. It was a giant pig, like straight out of like that one Family Guy episode where Brian bred the most genetically perfect pig. And it's like standing there and it has fists for hooves. And it goes oink and then punches Brian.
I've never seen that one, but I like it.
Oh yeah, it's great. Yeah, so just kind of going to like a more kind of like bestial creature that doesn't like kind of like just exists more from chaos, like the chaos beast and stuff like that. But that's always been, that's kind of been overplayed a lot too.
Yeah.
So I've been kind of going round and around on it, you know.
I mean
you're, undead.
You're a DM. Undead are, you can do what yeah. you want. So
undead are always a very good race, or not race, but a very good type of monster.
Yes.
That anyone can basically get like, oh, we just got to slaughter them because they're bad guys. They're undead. They shouldn't be undead. And no one questions that because undead aren't real. Which makes me say this. If we ever want to unify and have world peace, or at least point the world towards one thing that we can all agree on, it would be someone has to become a real life lich and raise an undead army and try to take over the world. Unify the world for a little bit.
I am fairly sure we already have some politicians that are that.
Liches? Yeah, probably.
Yeah. On that note, I think that's more than enough of this wild-ass episode.
All right. No more Spelljammer. We'll talk about 1D&D when it gets more stuff, but...
Yeah.
You know, read it over. 1D&D, read it over. And give them feedback on the survey. Tell them what you like, tell them what you don't like.
Yes, and talk about... Tell them all about the stuff that you really don't like and why it's bad. But at the same time, when you see good changes, let them know about that too. That's important.
I was involved in a D&D next playtest, and they didn't have the amount of people giving them feedback as they do now. I did see that the packet had been downloaded more than anyone had done for the D&D next playtest.
Which is surprising that people could even find it. You have to go through four fucking web pages just to get to the survey.
Everyone uses D&D Beyond now except for you. Get with the times.
Even using D&D Beyond, I had to go through four pages on D&D Beyond to get to the survey.
Oh no, websites. I know they're scary, but you gotta click it with your mouse.
Yeah, if you want people to take your survey, you put it fucking front and center on the main page of your website, not four pages deep.
I see it front and center.
Yeah. Anyway.
Are you using Netscape Navigator still? I told you to upgrade your browser.
Oh, dipshit. I use Brave. We've talked about this before.
Maybe that's the problem. Use Google. Use a real one.
Oh, I am using the real one.
Join us all when we move to Firefox in January.
I'm not even going to go into Firefox. All right, we're done. Bye. Bye, Craig.
Bye, Craig.